Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Can the federal government require people to buy health insurance? Can the government make insurers offer health coverage to everyone? And is expanding Medicaid coverage for more low-income families fair to the states that administer it? Those were the questions weighed by the U.S. Supreme Court, and just minutes ago, the High Court answered in a 5-4 vote. The court majority upheld the constitutionality of President Obama's health care law, the Affordable Care Act. And today on the program, we're working through just how the ruling will affect you, your family, healthcare providers, insurers, and more. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Shelley Braun. She's the Reform Initiatives Director for the Utah Health Policy Project, a nonprofit, nonpartisan that works to find healthcare solutions for the uninsured. And Dr. Braun, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Dr. Scott Poppin. He is the chairman of the Utah White Coats, a group of 500 doctors and other healthcare providers that supports healthcare reform. He's also the Utah State Director for Doctors for America. Again, another group of doctors advocating healthcare reform in the country. And Dr. Poppin, welcome to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning.
Also joining us, Rod Beattie. He is the CEO of the Utah Hospital Association, a nonprofit organization which represents 10 health systems, more than 50 community hospitals, and other clinics throughout the state of Utah. And Rod, good morning to you.
Good morning.
President Obama may be issuing a statement on the ruling, so we may interrupt our conversation for that. But you can join us if you like. What role do you think the government should have in providing health care? What do you think about the ruling, and how will the ruling affect health care for you and your family or your small business? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. The anticipation is over. The court has ruled 5-4, upholding the entire health care reform law. What's your general reaction to the decision? Let's start with you, Rod Beattie.
We're pleased with the decision. It's been a long time getting this resolved, but we started working years ago to find some comprehensive solution to getting everybody covered for health care. We understand the political views on both sides of this, but it makes no sense to continue to move forward without some kind of a comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. So more work will be done as this, you know, as we move forward in the coming election and next year, but I think this is a good place to be at this point.
Mm. Dr. Poppin, I imagine you'd agree.
Well, for doctors like me, hundreds of doctors in Utah, thousands across the country, this is a great day for us. We believe that the healthcare system needs to have increased accessibility and be more efficient. So this is a great step forward.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Braun, when you walked into the studio, you gave Dr. Poppin a high five. I'm guessing that means you approve.
Yes. We're quite pleased with the ability to move forward, like Rod said, with a comprehensive plan to make a difference. With 50 million plus people in the United States not having access to health insurance, which is our access point to health care in our country, this means we can move ahead and work on getting more of those people into coverage so that they can access care when they need it in a timely place and bring some costs into control.
The Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, and in the days and weeks leading up to today, there's been a lot of buzz about this decision. Why is it such a big deal, Shelley Braun?
Why is it such a big deal? Because we are an amazing country with amazing health care, yet our costs are out of control, and like I just said, a lot of people can't access that. And so our health indicators are not that good compared to the rest of the industrial world. Mm-hmm. So for Utahns, almost 400,000 Utahns do not have health insurance of some kind. Many of those are in the lower income tier from working in lower wage jobs that don't offer health insurance. And so this whole idea of getting a bunch of different pieces of the puzzle into place to make healthcare affordable and to make it accessible should help us have a healthier population, and everybody benefits when the population is healthier. Workers are more productive, children learn better. Nobody is going to not benefit from that.
Before we get to some of the specifics of what the Affordable Care Law will do, let's put this ruling into some context for our listeners. As I mentioned, it was passed a couple of years ago. Why did the Supreme Court get involved in this law, Rod Beattie?
Well, states brought actions, obviously, against the federal government. And the principal concern was whether the federal government could dictate to this degree in terms of what an individual's behavior was. And considerable debate about that, of course, in front of the courts. But the question was whether, if this was upheld, how far could that kind of behavior by Congress go? And the decision, I think, kind of skirts that question because it says the commerce laws that dictate what can be done between states and the federal government and the expectations placed there really isn't what they laid this decision on. It was on whether or not this tax could actually be applied to individuals. And so by narrowing it up like that, they kind of took the broader question off the table and said that this is not really with respect to what all individual responsibility might be attacked by Congress in the future, if you will. But this was a taxing issue, and the federal government has the authority to do that. Mm. So I think that's at the heart of the decision.
Very, very contentious debate during the deliberations of this law. Republicans call it Obamacare. Democrats generally like the plan. What did doctors think? How did you weigh in on the debate of the Affordable Care Act in 2010?
Well, doctors are split, just like the general population. There are docs who are opposed to it. There are lots of docs who are wondering what it all means. They're skeptical, which docs tend to be. They're sort of waiting to see what happens. But there's hundreds of doctors, thousands across the country, who have been realized for years that the healthcare system needs to change. And 2 years ago, I looked around to find something where I could get involved with and make a difference.
Mm. Could yes, I address Robbie? That too, Jennifer? The hospitals came together nationally, and we had internal strife about this ourselves. Mm. But the bottom line was that we needed to find a way forward. And we thought coming out of the presidential elections last time around that the public said they want an answer to this. And so what we did nationally was rally as a group of 5,000 hospitals and accepted $155 billion worth of reductions in payments from Medicare and Medicaid over the next 10 years to help offset the $1 trillion cost of this program. Mm. That was the estimate, if you will, of a windfall that hospitals would get because now people would have coverage who came through the doors before who didn't have insurance. So we didn't want to see any net gain to hospitals. So that was one of the worrisome things for us was that they would take away the individual mandate, yet hospitals would suddenly have lost a revenue stream of $155 billion. And if you look at how healthcare is paid for in this country, over 50% of it is paid for by Medicare and Medicaid, federal programs. Another 25% is paid commercially through employers and insurance that they provide. And then another 15% is out-of-pocket expense that Americans put on the table. And then the other 10% is just kind of miscellaneous things beyond that. But this would have put more pressure on employers if the individual mandate had not been upheld because Medicare and Medicaid would not increase their payments and costs would continue to go up. And the only place that all providers have to go for that is to the individuals and to the commercial marketplace with private insurers. So again, I think this decision sidesteps a really critical fiscal problem that could have erupted across the country if just a piece of this was not upheld and the rest of that law went forward with the kinds of provisions that were contained in it. Mm.
Dr. Shelley Braun, so we would have been back to square one if the court had ruled otherwise, if they had said the mandate is unconstitutional?
If they had just ruled against the mandate, we would be worse than square one because we have some protections in place already, like children cannot be denied health insurance because of a pre-existing condition, that young adults can stay on their parents' insurance, that insurance companies can't kick somebody off when they get sick. Those things would increase cost to insurance company. Without the mandate bringing everybody in to bring in more premiums, that actually would have been a financial problem for our healthcare industry. Right now, people who don't have access and can't pay, we all pay for that. It gets paid for. So if that would expand, then like Rod was just saying, then we would have kind of this financial time bomb. So the mandate does help keep this all together. If they had struck the entire law, then we would be back to square one, which was unreasonable price increases for more than a decade and benefits going down and people losing their healthcare coverage.
Speaking with Dr. Shelley Braun, she is the Reform Initiatives Director for the Utah Health Policy Project. Also with us, Dr. Scott Poppin, Chairman of the Utah White Coats, a group of doctors that supports healthcare reform, and Rob Beatty. He is the CEO of the Utah Hospital Association, a nonprofit which represents clinics and hospitals throughout the state. And we're talking about the healthcare ruling. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. If you haven't heard, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld the Affordable Health Care Act in a 5-4 vote. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. The big point being challenged in what is, you know, the Affordable Care Act, this individual mandate, the idea that the federal government can indeed require people to buy health insurance or face a fine, was upheld. Opponents said, you know, this violated the Constitution, the Commerce Clause, as you mentioned, Rod. But the court has said it's effectively a tax. Taxes can be levied by the government. Did you see this argument coming, Dr. Poppin? I mean, did you think that this would be the reason why the majority of the court would uphold an individual mandate?
Well, I didn't. I think that point was not even argued by the government during the case. But I think that Justice Roberts obviously felt that the law was constitutional, and he very cleverly looked for a mechanism to make it so, so a good outcome.
What did you think? I mean, did you see that rationale coming? Rod, what did you think?
I would have been with the Las Vegas bettors on this, that the 80% of the money was on, you know, that the mandate would have gone down. Mm. So I was, surprised this morning when I heard the decision. I think, the right place to be. I think it didn't hit the nail on the head in terms of debating the real issue here. But, you know, that's for other people to decide, I guess, as to whether or not that was the right way to go.
The individual mandate certainly has been the most controversial, the most unpopular part of the Affordable Care Act. Why did President Obama include it in the law in the first place? I mean, Shelley, you say it's kind of a foundational point. I mean, you can't have healthcare reform without this mandate.
In order for reform in the private insurance market to work, where we have people buying an insurance product from a private insurance company and the insurance company paying out claims when people need to use healthcare, in order for that to work, insurance companies have to have both healthy and sick people paying in. You have to bring in enough premiums to cover the amount of medical claims you have to pay out. With the other parts of the health law, allowing people to come in no matter what, not being able to deny anybody or keep anybody out, which is what insurance companies can do now. They can operate now because they can say, you're already sick, we're not going to take you, then we won't have to pay for you. You have a pre-existing condition, we'll take you, but we won't cover that pre-existing condition. In order for those things to go away, to protect consumers so that their health insurance works when they need it, and for insurance companies to remain solvent, we need to have everybody playing in the game, everybody in the pool, so to speak. And so we have healthy and sick alike, young and old, all paying in, and then insurance companies can stay solvent. And then all of us, God forbid, need to pay big hospital or doctor claims, then that's there for you when you need it. Right now, that's not necessarily there for you when you need it. So the mandate is included because in the private insurance market game, everybody's got to play for it to work out well financially.
Mm. Rod Beatty?
Just want to add, you know, another dimension of this is the entire Utah healthcare community has been preparing to do business differently for the last 5 years. And if you look at the numbers in terms of efficiency of healthcare and even quality, I mean, Utah's in the top five in all the quality measures, however you want to attack that. You look at the cost side of this, Utah has the lowest cost per capita in the nation. And those are federal numbers last year that show that and this isn't what you pay for insurance, but this is the overall cost per capita to a state. $5,000 in Utah compared to a high of $9,000 in Massachusetts, where you obviously have an individual mandate operating already. But we're in a place here where we can craft something now that we know what the rules are moving forward that's going to completely change how healthcare is managed and delivered so that it isn't just these individual silos, doctors, hospitals, others, not really connecting as well as they could going forward. And that foundation is in place now, and we can move forward to try to implement that in this state.
Rules of the game are now clear. We're talking about today's Supreme Court ruling on the Affordable Care Act and what it means for consumers, for low-income families, hospitals, doctors. If you haven't heard, the High Court ruled 5-4 that the reform law is constitutional. And joining us in the studio, Rod Beatty, CEO of the Utah Hospital Association, Dr. Scott Poppin, chairman of the Utah White Coats, a group of doctors supporting health care reform, and Dr. Shelley Braun, from the Utah Health Policy Project. And we invite you to join us as well. What do you think of the Supreme Court's ruling this morning? If you have questions about the Affordable Care Act, give us a call, 801-355-TALK. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Whether you have health insurance or qualify for Medicaid or are one of the 50 million uninsured Americans, health care affects all of us. About an hour ago, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld President Obama's health care reform law, the Affordable Care Act. And today on the program, we're sort of working through what it all means, what the implications the ruling will have for you, for patients, for doctors, for hospitals, and others. Joining me to help process this recent judgment from the High Court, Dr. Shelley Braun. She's the Reform Initiatives Director for the Utah Health Policy Project. Also with us, Dr. Scott Poppin, Chairman of the Utah White Coats, a group of doctors supporting healthcare reform, and Rod Beatty, the CEO of the Utah Hospital Association. And you can join our conversation if you like. How will the court's ruling affect your life? How would you like to see healthcare reformed? You can give us your impressions or comments at 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. The Affordable Care Act proposes expanding Medicaid to provide coverage for 16 million more Americans. Rod Beatty, what does the ruling say on this point?
The ruling says that a state can elect not to increase beyond their current eligibility levels, in other words, adopt the expanded coverage, without suffering damage to their current program and the funding that they're getting for the current program. They wouldn't get any new money, obviously, for the expanded population that they choose not to serve. That's an interesting twist. That's not a position the federal government would normally take. It's an either all-in or all-out kind of a deal if you ask them to make a decision along those lines. It's a situation that's going to present a really significant challenge to the governor and his staff here in terms of where to go next. And if states choose not to do the expansion, knowing they now have this kind of protection, the federal government's still going to have to come forward with it because they cannot leave part of the population of one state at a different place than other states are at. Mm. I have a little, you know, special interest in that. I ran Medicaid for 30 years for four governors before I came into the hospital business, and I understand trying to keep a program within a finite amount of money, stretch those dollars as far as you can. I'm part of the history of Medicaid in Utah, so I'm partly to blame, I guess you would say, personally, for the levels of eligibility that it's at right now. But it's just a constant struggle to try to find the money to make sure you don't implode the budget while you're trying to get more people coverage. And seeing the governor work through this will be interesting in the next few days. I guess he has a statement to make today. Mm-hmm. But somehow we have to deal with that. And I don't know what the answers are to that, but we clearly need to deal with that.
What does it mean, this ruling, Dr. Braun, for how many Medicaid recipients do we have in the state of Utah right now? Anyone know, Rod?
Yeah, it's over 200,000. And if this expansion occurred, that's an unduplicated count on an annual basis, you would see another 100,000 plus come into the program. Now, not all of those are newly eligible by increasing the eligibility amounts. It goes to 133% of the poverty level. Some are eligible today, but for whatever reason have not chosen to come in and apply for Medicaid. But the individual mandate now forces them to, because if they don't come get Medicaid, then they have to find insurance on the private market, which obviously is much more expensive. Mm. For the ones who are out there and have not applied but are currently eligible, The state would get the normal federal match rate for them, which is in about 30% of its federal money and 70% is paid, excuse me, the other way around, 30% of state money and 70% is paid by the federal government. For the new eligibles, the federal government will pay the whole bill for at least the next 5 years.
Huh.
So there's no state costs. Later down the road, some additional state costs comes in. But over 100,000 more clients would be likely to come into the program.
That's a huge number. So how does that affect the uninsured rate and picture here in the state?
We just saw new uninsured rates come out of the department. It's over 20% now in this state and almost 400,000 Utahns without any coverage. So, you know, that would reduce that by itself. Around 25% of the number of uninsured would suddenly come under coverage if the state adopted the Medicaid expansion.
What do you think about the ruling? I mean, do you think it's a good thing for Medicaid low-income people here in the state of Utah? Or what if the state opts out?
Yeah, I think it's going to be tricky. The expansion was something we were looking forward to in terms of getting that segment of the population coverage. This is a group, like Rod just said, affording private insurance is literally impossible. The average individual policy in Utah is about $176 a month. You know, how are you going to pay for that? And if you have a family to cover. So getting more people on will really help. This now becomes tricky because Utah has to make some decisions. Are they going to go ahead with the expansion? It's what people are calling the deal of the century, right? 100% federal money to come in and expand a program to get all of these people covered, at least for the next 5 years. And then the match rate's pretty good. The federal government will still pay 90% of those costs for those new people that are going to come into those new eligibility criteria.
So I guess the question is, why would the state refuse?
I don't have an answer for that.
It comes back to budget. It comes back to the rate of growth in Medicaid, okay, which is approaching 20% of all state spending right now. And how do you address where we are with education spending, other state needs, pull the economy out of, you know, the slump that it's been in, if you're directing all this state money to Medicaid and you have to balance this budget? The governor has to have a budget that balances. He can't do like the Congress and spend more than he's got. So that's what it comes down to, is just those priorities and trying to figure out where to draw that line.
Yeah, but without actually covering people who don't have coverage, especially in the lower income range, it still gets paid for. People still need health care, right? So what people end up doing is not getting health care and then coming in with more serious conditions and costing more, and then they end up in hospitals.
Right.
And that uncompensated care gets paid for eventually, and a lot of it gets shifted into private health insurance premiums. It gets tacked on to that rate, and so people who are buying health insurance are actually paying for some of that uncompensated care. Or you have people who do want to get care, don't have coverage, want to go into a community clinic, which is designed to see them, but they don't have enough capacity, and so people are forced to wait maybe 6 weeks right now for an appointment. They end up in emergency rooms for primary care, which is ridiculously expensive. So covering them and creating a system that can actually see them all, which is going to be complicated, and maybe changing the incentives of the system, which is something Utah's doing, moving towards a model where providers do link up and there is communication, and the goal is to create a healthier population. That hopefully will both allow us to cover more people and do it in a more cost-effective manner.
Dr. Poppin, are doctors weighing in on this Medicaid question? I mean, the ink is still wet on the Supreme Court decision, but, I mean, have you considered what it would mean for doctors if the Medicaid population expands dramatically here in the state of Utah?
Well, doctors are going to have to step up. Obviously, there will be a lot more patients that will need to be seen, and of course, we'll be using, with the help of our physician's assistants and nurse practitioners in there who are in increasing numbers, I think we'll be able to see those patients. Also, the Medicaid rate for physicians is going to increase closer to the Medicare rate. So that'll encourage more doctors to take new Medicaid patients. And there are primary care offices out there who do need more patients. So I think that we'll handle the increased supply of patients.
Rod, BD?
I was just going to add a couple of things I'm sure the legislature will be thinking about, is that Medicaid in Utah has grown 50% in the last 4 years, just from the effect of the economy. People having to search out someplace to get health care. That's making them very nervous. Then the promise of paying for the expanded group at 100% money makes them nervous too, because they've seen the federal government renege on these things in the past. And so how far do you go out on that limb only to have the federal government then come back later with some different policy? So they're going to have to sort through that, obviously, and figure out what to do. And, you know, I have no prediction on where that's going to come down. But it's going to be a very interesting debate to listen to in the legislative session coming up.
Indeed. Rod Beatty, he is the CEO of the Utah Hospital Association. Also with us, Dr. Scott Poppin, chairman of the Utah White Coats, and Dr. Shelley Braun with the Utah Health Policy Project. We're kind of working through what it all means, the U.S. Supreme Court decision this morning, 5-4 vote, upholding the Affordable Care Act. 801-355-TALK is our number if you'd like to join us. If you've got questions or comments about what it means for you, 801-355-TALK. What about young people? The Affordable Care Act would have allowed, you know, people 26 and under to stay on their parents' insurance. This has been upheld, Rod Beatty?
It has, but, you know, that's been in place in Utah since the early 90s. Back when I was the health director, that was one of the changes we made when Governor Leavitt was in office, was to request that, you know, or to require that. The difference is a state law can only require that of insurers who are not self-insured, companies that don't self-insure themselves. They go through an insurance product. The federal law requires it of all, everybody, all self-insured companies, as well as those getting third-party insurance. And, you know, so it's been a good provision for Utah. It has worked remarkably well, I think, here in terms of making sure that those that are under 26, whether they're in school, on missions, whatever, don't go without coverage. And I've seen no data in the state that suggests that it's caused any significant increase in premiums. You know, maybe it's been 0.5% or something like that, but it has not been a big financial drain. Yet we've known we've covered thousands of young adults through that kind of provision. So that, I'm pleased to see that that's there.
Mm-hmm. Shelley Braun, have you seen any significant change? And because we have this provision in Utah law that says, you know, we need to keep our young people insured, will this new ruling by the Supreme Court make any difference, do you think, here in Utah?
Well, it will allow them to continue to be insured. And so for our population of young adults who are finishing school and getting those first jobs that tend not to carry health insurance and have parents who happen to have health insurance, they will be able to maintain that coverage until they're into a position of their own to be able to get it. So I think it's a good thing. A recent study just came out that suggests that that portion of our population, there's a idea that they don't get insurance because they don't think they need it. They think they're really healthy. This study showed that for the most part, people report at that age they don't get it because they can't afford it. There's a very, it was like 6% said, oh, I don't need health insurance. So I think this is important. If we want that segment of our population to be productive and getting into their careers and moving forward, we're all for it.
The Affordable Health Care Act, it goes into effect in 2014, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where do we go from here?
We implement it.
Okay. Okay, how do we do that? Dr. Poppin?
Well, I think the biggest challenge here locally is to get the health care exchanges up and running. So in 2014, folks will be able to go on to the health exchange. These would be folks who are lower income or middle income who make more income and can't be on Medicaid, and they should be able to go into the exchanges and get an affordable policy. There will be some help from the federal government to pay for your policy. So the big thing that Utah needs to do, and fortunately Utah is way ahead of the game in the exchanges. It's set up its exchange quite a while ago, and there are some states that haven't done anything. So we're at a great advantage there, but we need to set it up and so that it's up and running in 2014.
Conceptually, remind our listeners, what is the health exchange concept, Rod B?
It's basically a portal that you can go to on the web, look at insurance products that are out there willing to, you know, play in that portal with a chunk of money that you have available, and buy the product that makes the most sense for you. That could be a catastrophic program with a high deductible, or it could be the traditional kind of insurance with the low copays and you know, higher premiums, obviously, but then you get a broad range of services available to you. Something of interest, I would think, to people with kids that need to be sure that they're getting screened and getting the care that they require. But it's an opportunity if you go out and shop on your own to get a product that makes sense for your family or for you individually if you have no family.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, Shelley?
So the exchange, it'll serve two of our insurance markets. It will serve people who are buying individual policies, so they don't have an offer at work, or the offer that they have at work is not affordable, which means it's more than 9.5% of their income. And then there's a small business exchange for businesses with 2 to 50 employees, and that's the kind that we already have running. So yeah, Utah's got to get those in place. In that individual exchange, people will be able to apply for insurance, and depending on their income, on a sliding scale, they'll get help paying for their premiums. There will be the health plan sold there will be qualified health plans, so they'll know that they're getting a specific quality of product, and they will have cost sharing limits or reductions depending on their income. So they're only going to be allowed to spend a certain percent of their income on health care depending on where they fall in a range.
You know, just for the listeners who don't have access to coverage through their employer or aren't going to be eligible for Medicaid, there is a tax credit for individuals who are going to be expected to have insurance going forward. And there's a calculator out there on the Kaiser website that you can put some numbers in and see what that credit would look like.
We'll put a link on our website, kcpw.org. It's interesting.
I saw a number of for someone in the with $60,000 of income with a family that I think the tax credit computed out to be somewhere around $6,000 or $6,500 annually.
Right.
So it starts to give you a sense of what you would get as a credit and what you could bring to the table as discretionary income of your own, and then how much kind of insurance you would be able to afford with that kind of money. But those are the kinds of decisions I think that people are going to be looking at in the next year.
Hospitals, clinics, doctors, what does tomorrow look like? I mean, now that you say, the rules of the game in place, where do you
go
from here?
We can start focusing on delivering care that what people need in the right place now. What's happened in the last 40 years is that everything's been paid on a procedure basis. So if you go to the ER, if you go see a physician, you go into a hospital, everybody's trying to figure out the packages, the procedures to get the right amount of money to cover the cost of your care. Now it's going to focus on you get into primary care sooner. It focuses on hospitals and doctors working to make sure that you cut through unnecessary procedures and get somebody through treatment and on their way more efficiently, because they're going to pay differently. They're going to pay for the outcomes now, and they're going to pay for what's a global kind of approach to this as opposed to piece by piece. And the system's going to behave very differently. It's going to take a lot of transition, but we've been preparing for years here in this state, and that's why our costs are so much lower. Now that the payment mechanisms from Medicare and Medicaid are going to line up with that, then we can really start bringing that to the table, and people will see healthcare delivered differently. And you'll see some medical homes really coming up where you come in and you'll feel like you are connected to a physician and to a healthcare system, and somebody's looking out for you and steering you through that in a more effective way. We had this in the 90s in Medicaid. We implemented it in 95. And every year we'd ask the Medicaid recipients how they felt about that approach. And every year, over 80% said they preferred it. In fact, more preferred it even than the commercial insurers who had the same kind of program. So I'm excited to see where we can go with this. I kind of see it as version 2.0 of managed care in this state. And I think the door is wide open for Utah to do some really exciting things over the next 4 or 5 years.
What's your practice going to look like in 5 years, Dr. Poppin?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to be in a position where we can provide patients with care that better care than things that they've never had before. I would hope that these things that we've talked about here, they're called accountable care organizations, and there's going to be new ways of doing things. And I hope that we have technology where we can actually see patients less in the office and more in the home situation, where we can use computers and other things so that we can evaluate people. And particularly in chronic care, the way we do chronic care now is basically people come to the office episodically. They come in, have their blood pressure checked, their diabetes checked, their heart checked, or if they have a chronic condition like a heart problem, a lung problem. And we do that in the office, and probably the way we need to be monitoring all that is not episodic episodically in the office every 3 months. We need to be doing that every single day in the patient's home using the equipment that we have and tremendous technology that we have. These accountable care organizations will allow us to do that.
What is, Dr. Braun, what does the ruling mean for Utahns today? Not 5 years down the road, but I mean, what does it mean for Utahns out there?
What it means for them today is that the provisions that have already taken place stick, so nobody's going to lose those. And then it means that those that are desperately waiting for care are going to have to wait just a little bit longer. Mm. Okay. Somebody...
2014.
2014, hang on, you know, care will be more available to you. And it means that we really need to hold Utah's feet to the fire. Implementation is going to be difficult. It's going to be comprehensive. We are lucky. Utah has good history. They chose to start reforming our own state's healthcare system before Obamacare showed up, right? Before federal reform showed up. So we have, I think, the political will to do something about our healthcare system. Now we need to start thinking about not fighting about whether we should do federal stuff or not do federal stuff, but really think, what do the people in Utah need? So, you know, we as an organization will be promoting good decision making, covering people in Utah, and paying attention to the outcome, doing the numbers.
Our time is short, and maybe this question is unfair or outside of your expertise, but you know, healthcare has been a political football for years and years. Will healthcare reform remain a major issue in the upcoming presidential election? I mean, are we going to see healthcare, you know, continue to be batted back and forth during the upcoming election season? Rod Beattie?
Absolutely. I think that this puts healthcare front and center in the upcoming presidential elections. And the reason I see that having occurred is because we all thought, at least I did, that we were past the public question about whether or not people wanted a solution. You know, and I was really surprised as the solutions came out to see the public reaction to it. And I think a lot of it is the worry over the individual cost and the lack of individual decision-making that they see going forward. And we're going to play off that some more in the upcoming election, and we're going to try to figure out how to get where we need to be. I mean, if this went down, we would still be talking about how we're going to fix this. We can't stay where we are. And so you'll see the Republicans and the Democrats jousting about this for the next several months. And once Congress comes back after the new president is sworn in, you'll see more debate about this. It is not going to calm down.
Mm. Anything to add to that debate going forward?
Well, I would point out that some of these things that are in the healthcare reform bill are non-controversial. They're bipartisan. Accountable care organizations are a part of the, Medicare reform in Obamacare. They've been championed by Senator Dan Lilienquist here in Utah. Governor Mike Leavitt is a strong supporter of accountable care organizations. So there's things we can get together on. But most importantly, we need to focus on patients over politics.
And Dr. Braun.
I would agree with that. I think the public opinion, it's one thing to say I don't support health reform as an individual citizen. I have questions about it, blah, blah, blah. But when it comes down to asking people, do you think you deserve health insurance? Do you think you want to get your medical things? No one ever wants to say no to themselves or their own family. So when it's personal, people actually would support accessing the system. So I think as a country, we need to get behind this idea, like, there's also a moral issue to it, right? Should people, are you okay if your neighbor can't go to the doctor but you can? Are you okay if your neighbor can and you can't? We need to do something. We can't stay with the status quo where prices just keep going up and people don't. So it's going to be a strong debate. I think the election is going to be, it's going to be interesting to watch.
Brace yourselves.
Yeah.
Dr. Shelley Braun, she's the Reform Initiatives Director for the Utah Health Policy Project. Thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Scott Poppin, Chairman of the Utah White Coats, thanks to you as well.
Pleasure to be here.
And Rod Beattie, CEO of the Utah Hospital Association, thanks for your participation this morning.
It's great to be here.
Coming up next, the latest mystery from Gerald Elias. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.